Welcome to Energy Stew. This is Peter Roth, your host. And this is a show about self-nurturing, taking care of yourself. And we're going to be talking mostly about women, but us guys better listen hard because we can all nurture ourselves better. And I'm on the phone with an expert on self-nurturing, and I know she's an expert on self-nurturing because I see her nurturing herself all the time. It's my wife, Deborah Roth, who's the author of a new book called Circle of One, The Art of Becoming a Self-Centered Woman. And I would even add to that The Art of Becoming a Sacred Self-Centered Woman. And this is about self-sacredness, right?
Definitely. And I think that the way that I describe it is that it's actually, and you can transpose the words either way, and they mean the same thing, that we're talking about sacred self-centeredness as opposed to the kind of self-centeredness that we normally think about, you know, the real egotistical, that person is brags or is so self-centered, and we think of it as a negative thing. And what we're talking about with sacred self-centeredness is an emphasis on the self with a capital S, and that self being the core of who we are, really the essence of where the best of us lies, what I call our circle of one.
Why is there a need for this book?
What a great question. And I have to say, yes, you've seen me nurturing myself, Peter, and I will say that you are, and this takes us into why this is important, because it is one of the things that, as you said, everyone needs to do, but women in particular, you are one of my big nurturers. And I think one of the things that we need to do, and one of the reasons why this book is important, is that, yes, as much as it's about reminding people to come back to their selves with a capital S, to come back to their circles of one, one of the big reasons that we need to do that is that if we're depleted, if we're operating out of an internal black hole, if we're not taking care of ourselves and on every level, mentally, physically, emotionally, spiritually, then we can't take care of the people that we really want to, that we want to nurture, and in turn, they're not going to feel very compelled to nourish and support us. So the image for Circle of One, the image on the book and the image that I've always thought of it, is as concentric circles. So, you know, considering your life, thinking of your life as concentric circles with you in the very center, with you in the circle of one in the very center. And when you see the cover of the book, that's exactly the image that's there. And your family probably being the innermost circle outside of you, you know, the people that you love the most, that you live with, that you have history with, that you rely on and who rely on you for nurturance and support. But from there, it really builds out. And what makes it sacred is that we're starting with, and I love this phrase, we're starting with our own soul spark deep within, that which connects us to the divine. It's our scintilla. Meister Eckhart, who was a German philosopher, medieval German philosopher, coined that phrase, your scintilla, your soul spark, and I just love that image. And once we are in touch with that, yes, we may be taking care of ourselves, and yes, in the process, maybe saying no. You know, if your kid wants you to rush to school to bring them a report that they left at home that was due today, or if you're getting 5 calls a day from your mother, sometimes saying no cannot sound very nurturing to the people that love you. But starting with yourself, it's important to set really strong boundaries. And even within that innermost circle, and I think sometimes that's where it's the hardest to start to begin to practice sacred self-centeredness, are with those innermost circles of in the spiral of your life, and of your family, your friends.
Our audience can go back to a show that I did a while back about getting rid of the vampires in our lives.
Exactly.
And family members can become vampires, and we, but only if we let them.
Definitely.
And you have to, because one of the truths in that book was you don't have vampires in your life unless you invite them in.
Right.
And so there are a lot of women out there who actually felt responsible enough to give so much of themselves that people took too much advantage of that.
Right.
And so a lot of this book really is about finding that self within who matters to the degree that we don't have to be victims. And there are so many people, especially mothers, I would imagine, are maybe the way they think they get support is by playing the victim role.
Playing the victim role or giving so much to their children and their families and everybody else that they completely burn out. And I think the, being a coach, I am a life and career transition coach, so I work with a lot of people in transition. I work with people who are stressed. That's typically why you reach out for support, whether it's the kind of support that you provide, Peter, your clients, or however I interact with mine. And when people come to us in that state, it's imperative for us to be able to get them to think about where their energy is being depleted, whether, and as you said, ultimately it's their own choice to let an energy vampire in. But sometimes there's just moments in life, and I taught a teleclass on the phone on Monday, and we talked about this, that we move in and out of periods of transition. We move in and out of high stress, overwhelmed times all the time. I mean, unless you're in this day and age, unless you're, you know, a Buddhist nun or monk on a mountaintop, it's hard to avoid having at least occasional moments of overwhelm. And my message in Circle of One, yes, that it's particularly geared towards women because I think women, as you pointed out, moms in particular, but it's most definitely not limited to parents, that we are socialized from early on to nurture and to take care of other people. We also hormonally and chemically are built that way. With our estrogen, we emit during times of stress, and when we're nursing, we emit oxytocin, which is they call it the nurturing hormone. And we have a natural tendency to tend and befriend anyway, which is a phrase that some female scientists at UCLA dubbed this chemical response. Rather than fight or flight during stress, because women give off oxytocin, which balances the testosterone-driven fight or flight reflex, we tend to reach out more. And that reaching out is healthy. But if you're reaching out so much that there's nothing there for you to fall back on for yourself, it's not going to work. And my point in Circle of One is, yes, to talk about this practice, which we're really focusing on right now, of what I call radical self-care, which is taking care of yourself on every level, mentally, physically, emotionally, spiritually. And I say it's radical because most of us don't do enough of it. But the other pieces that make this particularly, and why this book was focused primarily for women and the men who love them, is to remind women to come back to their bodies, to remind women to come back to all the symbols and responses that are so innate to us, the power of the circle, which is why it's called Circle of One. Our wombs, our breasts, our bellies, we, as the female gender, we represent, you think of all the symbols out there in the world, where we think of the male symbol being more phallic and, you know, linear and full steam ahead, whereas women are inclusive like the womb, circular like the womb. And in that same metaphor, we cycle. And those cycles, with our menstrual cycles, those cycles are so intimately connected with the cycles that all of humanity lives with. The cycles of the sun every day as it moves through, you know, from dawn to noon to dusk to midnight. The cycles of the moon, which of course are huge. There's people always talk about women who live together in community often tend to cycle together. And in ancient times, before there were electric lights, women were on their moon cycles together. But then the other big cycle, and actually there are many cycles, but the other really big one are the cycles of the earth and the seasonal cycles. And I believe that because of women's innate circular, secular basis, you know, foundation, that one of the ways that we can come back to being more sacredly self-centered is to hook back into the cycles of our bodies, to reconnect with the cycles of nature, and in so doing, not only be able to live each day more consciously, more sacredly, but also move through the really big life changes that happen, you know, losing a job, moving across the country, you know, having a child, getting married, getting divorced, whatever. It doesn't matter. You don't have to be a mom. Everyone goes through tons of life transitions, and really in any moment, and usually a combination of several at the same time.
Well, one of the things about this book is that it's not only inspiring. It's actually a handbook, really,
yes,
of doing things,
yep,
of how to nurture yourself, where to go, what to do, how to hold it, how to hold yourself.
Exactly. In the first half of the book, I call Constructing the Spiral, Learning the Art of Sacred Self-Centeredness. And I describe, based on my own work and research, my master's thesis, which was on the power of women's ritual and our connection to nature and to the four elements, fire, water, air, and earth. A lot of my master's thesis made its way into this book after hearing for years people say to me, oh, you should turn that into a book. So the first half of the book is the kind of laying the groundwork, introducing women to the idea, to what I mean by sacred self-centeredness, then talking about what I call our divinely feminine circles and cycles that we live our lives in. And then, you know, kind of building on that, how do we create, using the beginnings of this knowledge, or it's not the beginnings of them, it's really reconnecting with this deep, deep wisdom that's been there forever, but how we use that wisdom to create sacred space in our lives.
And also to be able to hold it amidst change.
Right.
And that's so big in our lives, and that's the whole point, is that change can create overwhelm.
Exactly.
And then overwhelm, you lose your sense of self.
Exactly. Well, and the point that I make in the book, too, is that the book is very much about cycles. And as I said, you know, our own cycles as women, but obviously men go through their life cycles, too. And I talk about the cycles specifically that women go through in the vernacular and the language of women's spirituality, that we move from our maiden years, as it's called in women's spirituality, to our mothering, nurturing time. And even if you don't have kids, we still have that impulse to create. And then into our perimenopausal or our premenopausal years, which is called alternately the Amazon queen years, and then postmenopausal wise woman crone time. So I look at the life cycles too, and bring that and to look at the cycles of change. You know, you were talking about the total predictability. There's nothing more predictable than change. That's not exactly the quote, but it's something along those lines. We can always count that there's going to be change in our lives, and change has a very predictable cycle to it as well. And there's probably the granddaddy of transition psychology is a guy by the name of William Bridges, who in the mid-80s started writing about, and his book was simply Transitions, was the name of his first book, talking about the fact that with any big change, you go through, just like Elizabeth Kübler-Ross with her five stages of grieving, there are predictable stages of change. You need to acknowledge the ending, and then there's a period, he calls it the neutral zone, and I talk about this in the book. I think it's anything but neutral. And for me, that middle zone where you're leaving behind or something's ended but you're not to what's next is really more a time of retreat and reflection. It can be a time of confusion and anxiety, but gradually it moves into this opening, you know, new beginnings and possibilities. What's up now? And there's any number of you can apply that simple three-tiered one, you know, three-tiered change model to just about any change you've gone through. But many other authors, have put out their different change models as well. So what the second half of the book does is that it looks at specific changes that we go through. And I divide it up into changes that might be more painful, honoring loss and marking endings. And I suggest ways that we can honor them, you know, we by recognizing our own cycles. But a big part of the book is if we're looking to move through change or anything in our life more intentionally, what we need to do oftentimes is to reprogram our subconscious. We need to reprogram, you know, where what we've always thought, because things are changing. We need to, you know, we need to shift our perspective.
But it's nice to have a guide.
Yes.
And that's what you're offering in the book is a guide to managing self within change.
Yes, but and for me, one of the important ways to do that, yes, you know, and this is as an example. When you're looking for a job, you're going to do all of the things that you need to do. You're going to set up your informational interviews, and you're going to network, and you're going to work on your resume and write your cover letters. But one of the things to kind of deepen that process, and I so discover this years ago when I first started coaching. I taught for an outplacement firm a two-day career transition workshop. And taught them all those things, you know, all the practical things that you need to know when you're in transition career-wise. But what really got people going was to get to the deeper part of what was going on for them, you know, emotionally, spiritually, as they made their way through this process. And so it's a deep process. Any change that we're going through, whether it's a happy one, you know, having a baby is still a stressor. You know, getting married, there's positive stress and then there's more challenging stress. And one of the things that I try to do in Circle of One is to introduce the notion of how we can use symbols, create clear intentions, and really teach people how to create very simple rituals and ceremonies that, because all ritual is symbolic action, and symbols are the language of the unconscious. So when you do something symbolic, when you throw a rock into the river that has all of your pain written on it, it sounds silly. I call it sacred play, but it sounds silly, but there's something visceral and very deep that gets triggered in your subconscious that lightens you a little bit.
Well, one of the things about ritual is that it changes the pace. And it pulls you out of the maelstrom.
Exactly.
To use ritual to center oneself again.
Well, and this was really the foundation of my master's work when I was my master's thesis, and the ritologist that I studied, which I was so delighted to see that there's the science of ritual is called ritology, and one of the things that they would talk about is one in particular. Who Arnold van Gennep, who's the guy who coined the phrase rites of passage, and he talked about just what you're alluding to, Peter, and that's that when we create sacred space, and in Circle of One I describe how people can do that, you know, really give them some tools, but when we create sacred space, one of the components of that is that we create an atmosphere, or we create an opportunity for liminality. And what liminality is, take it back to the origin of the word. Lemon is a threshold. So when we create ritual, we create a threshold a boundary between our everyday life and our deeper spiritual life. And so you step across the limit, you step across the boundary into this more deeply spiritual, sacred connection to your circle of one, to the divine, to the God, goddess, whatever you want to call it. And, you know, many people experience that just, you know, stepping across the threshold of their church or their temple. But you can do that by yourself in your, and by creating your own personal sacred space, too.
And
that's
and
a lot of what we talk about in the book.
And a very meaningful one, because you bring your special meanings into
exactly.
your special space.
Exactly.
So then, you know, it's kind of like little children having their teddy bears. And it's their object that they
exactly.
feel safe with and sacred with.
And that's actually a perfect example. That's one of those symbols. You know, I was talking about symbols being the language of the, unconscious. That teddy bear is a very visceral, potent symbol for that little person. But we as adults can create our own teddy bears or our own triggers, really.
I'm remembering when you were in labor, I think it was with both boys,
yeah.
that we had this little cloth doll
yep.
on the wall in front of you that you could stare at.
Yep.
And, you know, I'm sure it was doing a lot for you because you had difficult labors.
That's right. That was my own little birthing amulet. But I think it was something, and we still have it, too. In fact, I just went out. I'm looking. It's sitting just outside your office, kind of covered with dust right now, but it still sits in our house. It was like a little puppet thing that either, gosh, I might have given it to you as a silly Valentine's gift or something. So the meaning that it had was that it was silly, and everybody needs a little bit of silliness during labor, but it was something of yours, and it represented our relationship in this, you know, in this amazing next stage of life we were embarking on with the birth of, you're right, I think it was both boys.
So you had something that could pull you out of the maelstrom
yes.
of labor to focus on that meant something to you.
Well, and that's what we call a talisman or an amulet. And that doesn't have to be this weird woo-woo thing. It can be something as simple as, you know, this funny little puppet doll. When I mentioned a minute ago that and you remember this, when I went into this corporate office when I first started coaching, and I'd been out of the corporate world at that point, probably about 8 years, and I was kind of, oh, I can't believe I'm doing this again, and why am I going back into this environment that I was so happy to get out of? And someone pointed out to me, well, wait a minute, don't you love helping people, and don't you like giving presentations? So what's the big deal? I mean, so that shifted it, but I would carry in my pocket. I had my own little feminine power amulet that I carried in my suit pocket that was this little silver goddess figure, but it was one of the power ones. She's got her arms raised up in the air, and that was, you know, I would feel the weight of her during the day, and it's like a wedding ring, or it's like, you know, our little funky birthing doll. Any of those things, even when you're not consciously either remembering what you did to imbue it with meaning, or that it's just been a while, and even if consciously you don't remember, there is a deep unconscious connection that happens that grounds you or excites you or calms you, you know, whatever it is that you've imbued it with, and that's the power of an amulet.
But a lot of the book is about self-sacredness, and it's about creating sacredness in your life.
Yes.
So perhaps an amulet is sacred, but so are spaces.
Definitely. And that's probably the first place I start with anyone who comes to work with me. And it sounds mundane, but they catch on pretty quickly that the idea of decluttering is a huge metaphor for cleaning out their lives. And then in the space that's created, then you can start to, both internally and externally, you can start to create what it is that you want to bring into your space to make it sacred, to make it meaningful and personal and yours.
Right. So this is about honoring your own world, your personal world,
right.
and creating things and space that enhance your own sense of self-sacredness.
Exactly. And I, the last, I want to be sure that we make clear, too, I hope people have got the message by now that this is not, you know, just singularly focused on you and taking care of you at the expense of everyone else. That is not sacred self-centeredness.
No, but it's also to know your own sacred self-centeredness allows you to recognize that in others and enhance it in others. So if we're being overused by other people, we're not honoring their selves.
Right. And we can, exactly. And I think when we get that, and we can start to model that kind of positive, self-nurturing, self-loving, sacred self-centeredness practices for people.
Right, taking care of yourself. Right.
Exactly.
And so then you can say to people who you've been overly taking care of, you can realize you're enabling them, and maybe you should stop doing that and help them honor themselves.
Well, and one of the things that I point out in the book is that when we start to do that, especially with people that are closest to us, there can be some pushback. But you hold your ground, and through your modeling, through your gentle, and that's where feminine power comes in. We're not talking about beating somebody on the head or, you know, being super aggressive about it. We set boundaries, but with compassion and empathy. And we use assertive language that's still inclusive. You know, there's a way to speak that's still very powerful, that's not, you know, that's not making you a doormat, or on the other extreme, you know, making you a pushy broad, you know, to use one very not nice stereotype for strong women.
Yeah, it's not about dumping.
Exactly. Well, and ultimately, yes, you know, we've been talking about the people that are closest to us in our lives, but the last chapter in the book is really about, now that you've created this foundation, that you've really shored up and created this strong, wonderful circle of one, and through the ripple effects of doing that are, you know, as you pointed out, helping other people to strengthen theirs, then you can move into what you're here to do. How can you serve others best? You know, what's your work in the world? And to begin to look at the ways, how do you want to change the world? How do you want to give back and contribute and, you know, do whatever you can to elevate the planet and elevate, yes, first and foremost, the people that you come in contact with. But the last chapter really kind of plays with a lot of different ideas of once you strengthen your own circle of one, how do you create... how do you become a part of a matrix of strong, healthy circles of one all over the world?
Right. You have something in here called Taking Women Spirit Power National. And then there's a part about circles going global.
Global, exactly.
Another part about shifting planetary consciousness.
Yep.
So this book, we only have a couple minutes left, and I just want to summarize that, you know, this is a book that covers a lot of territory.
Yep.
it starts with self-nurturing, and then it creates a powerful planet. And so it's something that, you know, I really enjoyed reading. Certainly it's women-oriented, but I think it's also very male-oriented in just that men are humans, and we all
sure.
need to be responsible and honor ourselves, and we're all sacred beings.
Right.
So,
definitely.
So the name of the book is Circle of One, and then the subtitle is The Art of Becoming a Self-Centered Woman, and your name is
Deborah Roth.
Deborah Roth. That's familiar to me.
And you can find Circle of One at my website, which is Spirited. S-P-I-R-E-T-E-D, spirit with an E-D, living.com. And you can click on the book there. If you go to spiritedliving.com/CO, lowercase C-O, you'll get to the page that describes Circle of One itself. But if you go to the website, you'll be able to get to it there, too.
And so they can purchase this book, Circle of One, online. It's an e-book.
Yes,
it is. It's not in the stores. So they go to spiritedliving.com, and they'll find it and everything else about you.
That's right.
With videos and audios and all kinds of wonderful things.
Well, and what it leads to, too, which I'll say to close, Circle of One is the foundation for a 9-month women's spirituality program that, well, I'm saying it's a women's spirituality, it's the Spirited Women Empowerment Journey program that begins in March,
That's great.
You'll see that on the website as well.
Great. Deborah Roth, thank you so much for being a guest on Energy Stew.
Wonderful to be here, Peter.
And this is Peter Roth, your host at Energy Stew at Progressive Radio Network. And I can be reached at peter@heartriver.org. And thank you so much for listening.